The reading today is from Colossians 2, verse 16, to Colossians 3, verse 4, and the passage is called The Freedom from Human Rules. Therefore, do not let anyone judge you by what you eat or drink, or with regard to a religious festival, a new moon celebration, or a Sabbath day. These are a shadow of the things that were to come. The reality, however, is found in Christ. Do not let anyone who delights in false humility and the worship of angels disqualify you. Such a person also goes into great detail about what they've seen. They are puffed up with idle notions by their unspiritual mind. They've lost connection with the head, from whom the whole body, supported and held together by its ligaments and sinews, grows as God causes it to grow. Since you died with Christ to the elemental spiritual forces of the world, why, as though you still belong to the world, do you submit to its rules? Do not handle, do not touch. These rules, which have to do with things that are all destined to perish with use, are based on merely human commands and teachings. Such regulations indeed have an appearance of wisdom. Their self-imposed worship, their false humility, and their harsh treatment of the body, but they lack any value in restraining sensual indulgence. Since then you have been raised with Christ, set your hearts on things above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above, not on earthly things. For you died, and your life is now hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you will also appear with him in glory.
My father died when I was 11. Still remember the day. We were playing cricket out in the street. I heard my mother shrieking. We'd had 3 years of warning, struggled with serious cancer in those days. They couldn't do as much as they do today. So I spent all my teenage years in a household just with one other person, my mother. My two older siblings, brother and sister, were a good bit older. I was a mistake, so I'm way behind them. And they'd already gone by the time I was in my teen years. I had a great teenage years. I had a very understanding mother. She left school when she was in sixth class and thought it was very unfair if I had to do any homework. So I didn't do any homework. I breezed through the 3 years. I gained a failure in my intermediate certificate, thought, who cares? I don't care about any of that. And it was a few years later that I had to go back to night school and make it up. Had a great time in my teen years. They were more innocent years, weren't they? We never got into drinking alcohol, so we didn't get that. Drugs were something we read about in America. I had two mates, Baldy, who was Kay's brother, and Hawley, and I was Mac. And we did everything together. I think we spent every weekend down near the lighthouse, around those rocks there, swimming in the rock pools and adventuring, and just a fabulous, fabulous time. And then, when I was 17, someone introduced me to Christ. And I came into the freedom that Christ gives. It was a wonderful freedom. It freed me from things I never even dreamt I had a problem with. See, it taught me, for example, in 1958 in Wollongong Church of Christ, that dancing was really bad because of what it led to. Now, I'd been to dances since I was about 12 in the old hall up in Coniston, but the truth was my dancer never led to anything. I was a bit disappointed, but gave it up anyway. Didn't have dancing. And then movies. You can't go to movies because movies are made in a pit of hell. And so never went to movies for years. First movie I ever went back to was The Ten Commandments, and I felt guilty going into movies. And then also my minister told me because I turned up one Sunday with a newspaper, he said, you shouldn't be supporting Sunday work because, you know, it's the Lord's Day. And so now I was really free. And they also taught me that gambling was absolutely wrong. Even the simplest form of buying a ticket in support of something was absolutely wrong. I remember our dear organist, and some of you remember her very well. She was wonderful. And she bought a ticket from some school kid who came to the door just to be nice. And she won. And a photo was in the Mercury. And she spent so much time on the Sunday explaining to everybody. She didn't go in to win it. She never meant to win it. And so here I was now, an experienced Christian. I knew all the things that you do as a Christian. And as I looked at them, I thought, none of them got me any closer to God. I couldn't find any link with God. So I thought, I've got to look somewhere else. So I began to really study the Bible. We were in three Bible studies a week, our youth group. They were a wonderful group of young people. And we were intense in our study. When I went to college, I never had to study the New Testament much. I just about knew it off by heart. And it was a wonderful year trying to get knowledge. Then when I felt the call of God into ministry, I go away for 4 years to the Churches of Christ College, Sydney, and graduated at the end of 4 years of full-time study and ordained in the ministry. I'm out in church work now. Two churches I took down in Victoria, stayed 5 years in each. And I realised that my education, general education, was weak because I never did anything at school. I even failed woodwork, metalwork, tech drawing, all on homework. I just didn't do any. They don't like that. So I did a Bachelor of Arts while I was in Victoria at one of the universities and did that in philosophy. And that was really interesting. It sparked my mind of studying other things. And so I thought, now, some knowledge, that's going to help me. That's going to get me closer to God, especially if I'm studying religious things. So then I go to America and I'm doing okay in church work and church is getting a bit noticed, and a university, a fully recognised university, came and asked me if I would organise a graduate school of ministry. And so, sure, I thought that'd be interesting. So I worked on that, and then I was dean of that for a while, as well as being minister of a church. And they gave me a divinity. You didn't realise that about me, did you? Divine? I think that's what it meant anyway. Anyway, that was very nice. Now I had a doctorate of divinity. And then every Sunday I would be preaching to about 6,000 people, and I thought to myself, I really need to study more. So I did a serious degree. With a Baptist university, I gained a Doctor of Theology. So now, I actually knew more than you think I know. And I had all this study, and did it bring me closer to God? No, I knew all about the JDP theory in the book of Genesis, and I knew all, you know, on and on and on. But that didn't get me to God any more than not dancing and not going to movies. So what on earth can I do? I came to realise that what we all want, while knowledge is important, what we all want is the experience of God. Isn't that true? You want to know God, know him. Paul wrote, that I may know Christ and the power of his resurrection. Well, I didn't get it through giving up all those worldly pleasures, and I didn't get it by throwing myself into academic study of religion. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? Well, we were given in those early years religious views about other religions. For example, in the Church of Christ, baptism is tremendously important. And so it should be, it's in the Bible and Christ commands it. But the Presbyterians didn't do it. And more than that, they had monthly dance. So we were pretty confident that we wouldn't have to put up with the pressies in heaven. And then the Baptists, well, they have baptism, so they'll be there. What about the Methodists? Now, the Methodists, that worried us, because in those days we had an organisation called Christian Endeavour, which was a deeply spiritual movement for young people. And we were in it in a big way, and so were the Methodists. And we loved the Methodists, and they preached the gospel. And we worried about them because they hadn't been baptised. What's going to happen when they get up there? And the Catholics, well, we knew what happened to you Catholics. Yeah. Same thing you thought was happening to us. So here's religion and theory and practice, and none of it was very satisfying in getting me the feeling of God. Does that make sense? I want to tell you something. When you know something, when you really know something, you've got nothing to learn. You got that? So your theories of religion that you are so dogmatic about and so sure about, you know it, so you've got nothing to learn. Alexander Campbell was a remarkable man at the beginning of the 19th century. As a matter of fact, he was one of the three people who started a non-denominational movement that had grown to multi-millions in 60 countries, no, 90 countries of the world, called the Church of Christ or Disciples of Christ. Alexander Campbell talked about the futility of studying the Bible through denominational spectacles. He said, when you are locked into your denominational spectacles, you've got nothing to learn when you come to the Bible. All you're looking for are proof texts to prove that you were right. So as I went on over my years, I thought, well, blow me down, that's me. Honestly, when I was in my 30s, 40s, I used to be able to preach about the second coming of Christ and I knew exactly what was going to happen. Exactly. Now I really have been the foggiest. I don't know. I've got some theories that might be true, but I don't know anymore. The unknown is so important, isn't it? You take, for example, Thomas. Thomas is not held up as one of the best disciples. As a matter of fact, he's given a nickname, Doubting Thomas. Why was he given that nickname? Come on. Now, you've got to shout out here, no microphones. Why was he called Doubting Thomas? He did, he questioned things, yeah. Yep, he would have done very well in 21st century Australia, wouldn't he? You know, you prove it, if you can prove it to me, I'll believe it. That's about it. Jesus, on the night he's about to be betrayed, he gets his disciples together and he says, let not your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. If I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, thee may be also. And where I'm going, you know, and the way you know. And Thomas said, we don't know where you're going. We don't know the way. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but by me. And then, after the crucifixion, the disciples are brokenhearted. They're all back there having a pity party, and it's the women who go to the tomb and find that Jesus is risen. So now they're all excited. And most of the disciples are together. There's only one missing, Thomas. I don't know wherever he was. He'd want the emotion, maybe. I don't know. He wasn't there. And Christ appeared in their midst. And then he went away again. And then Thomas gets in. Here's the disciples. They all say, oh, Jesus is alive. And, you know, he said, oh, come off. Well, grow up, you idiots. You know, he said, I'll believe it when I can put my finger in the holes, thrust it into his side. And then Jesus appeared. Thomas fell down and said, my Lord and my God. He was convinced now. What did Jesus say? He said, blessed are you. You've seen and you believed. Blessed are those who have not seen, but believe. Goodness me, that's you and me. Because We didn't get anything out of being tied up with don't go to dances, don't go to the movies, did we, in that era of Christianity? And we've all got bits and pieces we're pretty sure of in theology that we could argue about in a Bible study, but that isn't God. That isn't the experience of God, is it? He wants something more than that. In more recent years in my life, I have wanted to know Christ. I've got all the theology, I know all that. I can argue whatever you want to argue about. I can take both sides, sometimes do. But that's not it, is it? That's not it. What is this God? I've got a cabin on my daughter and son-in-law's property. They've got 15 acres out from town in Glen Innes. I've got a two-bedroom cabin there. Wonderful, big, long veranda. I love at night to go out there and look up because there's no artificial light. There's just the sky. Just the sky. Isn't that amazing? God made that. And when you think those stars just go on and on and on and on and on and on, who knows if it ever stops. So you look at that and then you say, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And you say to yourself, denominationalism, my petty arguments with somebody over religion, whatever else, does that really matter? Is that really what God is about? No. And God isn't just sitting up there in heaven looking down at God is so amazing, we can't define him. And that's when you get on all this creedal business where we try to reduce God to a size that we can handle. This is the God who made all those stars. How do I get contact with him? That's one way I get contact. I look at the sky. You know where else I find God? Mount Kira. Mount Kira Lookout. I was just up there again just recently. You stand up there at Mount Kira Lookout and you look out. There's the ocean. There's all the houses. There's all the escarpment, the beautiful trees, etc. And I just feel Jesus there. As I look at the houses, I hear him saying, "Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how I would have gathered you to myself as chickens, but you would not." I feel God. I really feel him up there. I also like down on the rocks just beyond North Beach. I love to watch the ocean smash against them. It reminds me that our power, we can build nuclear bombs that can do terrible things, I know that, but the power of God is just overwhelming, isn't it? You see, like, for example, the United States of America there last week, while they're watching that huge storm moving towards them, they can't do a thing about it. And when it comes, they can't stop it. They can just, you know, put up barriers or go inside or put sandbars, you know, trying to give some protection. But when God moves, it's God. It's God who made the heavens and the earth. And so the ocean reminds me of that. When you've got a strong religious understanding of something, the danger is that you ignore really other things about God. Take Martin Luther. Martin Luther was one of the recognized as three great theologians. They say Apostle Paul and Luther and Augustine in between. Martin Luther was a Catholic priest. You know the story. Catholic Church had got lost at that time. Pope Leo wanted to build the biggest church in the world, the best church, but he didn't have the money. So he hit upon a terrific business proposition. He sold indulgences. Now, you could always buy an indulgence or earn one to get your relative out of hell. But this new one was, you could now buy it, your sin in advance. So, you know, you could go and you, you got the bit of paper and said, you can go and do that sin now and it won't be accountable. That's a pretty good system because it raised, when you go to St. Peter's and you see that huge building, remember how it got there. I thought we might get a building that way. But I'm not sure there's enough of us. But anyway, Martin Luther, he became so frustrated with the church because the Catholic Church was teaching you got salvation by earning enough good points. That isn't it at all, he said. The Bible says we are saved by grace through faith. Faith alone, he said. It's not by works. And so he got, you know, Acts, what is it? No, not Acts. Ephesians 2, 8 and 9. For by grace are we saved through faith, not of ourselves. It is the gift of God, not of works, lest anyone should boast. He was so tied into this idea that it wasn't by works. But when he came to the Bible and he found a book in the Bible that seemed to teach against that, the book of James, he wanted James taken out of the Bible. And that's what we tend to do. When we've got this mindset of religion, we can't even entertain another idea. James is a brother of Jesus. He said, you know, show me your faith by your works. He wasn't saying that works saves you, but he was saying, you know, they should go together like a horse and cart, love and marriage. They're meant to be together. So, where else do we find God? Where else do we find God? We find God in art. Now, I remember a lecturer in my theological college saying back in the 60s, oh, I went to Italy and I went to the Vatican, Sistine Chapel, and that. I felt like going out and throwing up. I went to the Sistine Chapel and I thought, how magnificent is this? Michelangelo's painting, you know, of the creation of Adam, where you see God with his hand reaching down and Adam with his finger going up and the power of God. You look at those things and art can bring you close to God. I loved it. When I was minister at Crossroads in America, we had a big auditorium, seated 3,200. We had giant screens and all that stuff. And the music was every bit as loud. It was louder than what we have, actually. When it came to communion, the lights went down. And each week we would feature one of the great works of art. And I just found it was so beautiful to be able to just feel God in art and in drama. You know, drama can bring you, you know, can inspire you to just think how beautiful this creation is. I never thought when I was at school that I'd ever like Shakespeare. I always bought comic views versions of it to try and pass exams about it. But you know, I love, for example, I've several times been to see Romeo and Juliet. Oh, that I wore a glove upon that hand that I might touch that cheek. The beauty of love and adventure and falling in love and all that. You say, well, that's secular. It's got nothing to do with God. There is no such thing as secular and spiritual. This is God's world. This is God's world. Now, people can pervert those things, but no, you find God around you everywhere. But the key point is, get beyond knowledge and seek the experience of God. One of my other passions is politics. I love politics. I remember as a young man being excited when John Gorton became Prime Minister of Australia. He was not the upright, organised, boring type that so often represented politics. He was born outside of marriage. His father was English and then went via South Africa to come here. He was a very successful businessman, so there was money in the family. John Gorton got into politics And in a very controversial move to keep William McMahon out, they made him the Prime Minister, even though he was in the Senate. Now, he was a rough diamond. He called a spade a bee shovel. There's no question about that. I was in Sydney on a buying trip for David Jones, going along near the town hall, and coming down the steps was John Gordon and another politician. Now, this is before we thought anybody would ever threaten anyone, so they had no security around them or anything. He was just from here to there. I knew all about that man. I'd read the books about him. I'd looked it up. I was quite a fan. I could have told him a lot about his life if he wanted to know. So what do I do? Do I run up and say, John, it's so good to see you? No, because I didn't know him. I knew about him. Now, do you know God? Or do you just know about him? Have you experimented just to get to know God? There's a young woman who fell in love. It was only just starting out a romance. And she went to this guy's place and they're having dinner together. And they're in their 30s, and he told her that he had written a book and had been published. And she said, what was it? And he got it out and showed her. She said, I've got that book. I have read that book. She went home that night, and she said she never slept. She read that book, because now it was different. She knew the author. And if you will spend some time just thinking about God and trying to understand him, trying to experience him, then you will find when you do read the Bible, it will be a different book. It'll be a different book. So there we are. Jesus preached his most famous sermon, the Sermon on the Mount. It was full of all good advice about, dealing with the problems of life and all that. But when he gets to the end, he says, many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, haven't we done many wonderful things in your name? And he said, I will say, depart from me, I never knew you. Huge difference between knowing about someone and knowing them. Do you know God? Because you can get to know him. And it will happen through meditation and prayer. Amen. I